Hi there, and welcome back to the Hello Personality podcast, where we dig deep into personality type to understand who we really are so that we can live each day with greater purpose and intention by focusing on what really matters. I'm Leslie McDaniel, and this is Season 5, Episode 4. This season, we're exploring the concept of motivation through the lens of the 16 types and cognitive functions. In our last episode, we heard from an ENFJ about her relationship to her personality type and her understanding of her type and her daughter's type, and how this understanding really impacted her relationship at a time when they were really struggling. We also heard about what motivates and demotivates her as an ENFJ. So in this episode, we're going to hear from an INFJ. Allow me to introduce Joyce Meng, if you don't already know her from her YouTube channel. Joyce is a certified MBTI Master Practitioner, Master NLP Practitioner, and Gallup Clifton Strengths Coach. She is a passionate personality typology coach and profiler who helps individuals unlock their full potential and find fulfillment in life. She is the founder of Type Talks, an online community dedicated to exploring the fascinating world of personality frameworks, such as the MBTI, Jungian Theory, and the Enneagram. Her channel focuses on improving our understanding of people with different type preferences through skilled interviews and panel discussions. She has over 11,000 subscribers to her channel. Joyce holds an MS in Human Resource Management from York University and is currently enrolled in a PhD program in psychology. As a coach and profiler, Joyce has helped countless individuals gain insights into their strengths, weaknesses, and unique talents, enabling them to thrive both personally and professionally. Okay, so let's take a quick look at the cognitive function sequence of the INFJ before you hear my conversation with Joyce. We are going to be using a lot of the abbreviations and talking about the cognitive functions, so if you're not sure what those are, here's a quick refresher. INFJs use introverted intuition as their dominant function, which is symbolized by NI, then extroverted feeling, which is FE, introverted thinking, which is TI, and extroverted sensing, which is SE. As an INFJ, Joyce's dominant introverted intuition, or NI function, is going to cause her to speak mostly in concepts and abstractions, with not as much concrete sensory information as someone who has a sensing function higher in their sequence. All IJ personality types will want to have a level of control over things that happen, and they do that in their different ways depending on their dominant function, but all IJ types really don't want to face any sort of chaos or disruption to what they expect. And the reason is that they have an inferior, extroverted, perceiving function, which is about taking in information from the external world. Having that function last means that it's much, much, much more difficult for IJ types to adjust on the fly, so to speak, to anything external that comes at them, because they'll feel out of control. So they do their best using their dominant function to avoid this, really at all costs. For Joyce, as an INFJ, her dominant introverted intuitive NI function is constantly working in the background, and we'll talk about this in our interview, and it predicts or guesses what she's most likely to experience in the world. This preparation is all mental, as we talk about in the interview, and it may not lead to doing some of the sensory activities that are actually needed to be ready for what the external world throws at them. As you listen to my conversation with Joyce, see if you can hear some of the patterns of speaking in concepts, like an intuitive dominant person does, instead of speaking of actual experiences with sensory details. As an INFJ, Joyce prioritizes her first four functions over any of the other functions, but of course, we can use all of our functions, all eight. So even if you're not an INFJ, use this conversation to consider your relationship to introverted intuition, extroverted feeling, introverted thinking, and extroverted sensing. Since the overarching theme for this season is motivation, you'll hear us talk about the driving motivational force in Joyce's life, but also what demotivates her. Okay, so let's go ahead and dive in with Joyce. Hey, Joyce, welcome to the Hello Personality podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Happy to be on.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this conversation with you, especially you're the first INFJ that I've had on the show. So I'm looking forward to you really helping us understand what your lived experience is like as an INFJ. But I really want to start also with just like what motivated you to get into personality type to begin with. I know you have a lot of different certifications and a lot of different interests in this realm, but what motivated you to study this system?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've always felt different from my family and even people outside of my family, and I never really knew exactly why. So initially, I went to a lot of psychologists or people who could diagnose you with something to figure out, oh, is it some form of neurodivergence? Could it be autism or giftedness? Or could I be an indigo child? Mm-hmm. And I just really wanted an explanation for the world of difference I saw between my communication style and the people around me. And when I went there, they couldn't explain it through a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. They're like, there's actually nothing wrong with you. And it actually was this unanswerable question in my life. And so it wasn't until I was 14 and my ENFP friend, who's interested in a plethora of theories, was like, hey, I'm interested in this 16 type theory and I'm going to introduce all my friends to it. And as a declaration of love, she's like, but Joyce, I already know what you are. And if you think you're something different, then you're wrong. So her tertiary TE was really showing out there. Whereas for her, I noticed that she said that because for introverted feeling, to know you very deeply is a form of love. Mm-hmm. So she's like, I really do pay attention to all the nuances and subtleties to what make up you. So I know you very well. And yeah, we went through type theory together. We talked about it together a lot. And well, she arrived at INFJ for me, and I did too, from independently researching. And it really explained some of the things in my life that nothing else could explain. So it helped me be okay with some form of existential loneliness that I felt that I wasn't able to vocalize. Mm-hmm. Because you do realize when your cognition is very different than the people around you, but you just don't know how to put a finger on it. But what you're perceiving is real. So in a way, it made me feel like I wasn't crazy because I was seeing something that other people weren't seeing. And it that's okay. It's okay to be different. And I think type theory really teaches you that you have gifts to this world that only you uniquely bring. Yeah. Because all these types, they make up an ecosystem and they all have their role. And so it made me realize that I do have a role in this world. In some way, I belong. I may not belong in terms of fitting in to most groups, but I have a place I play.
Yeah.
So it almost reaffirmed me in my usefulness and my valuableness in the world. I was like, maybe I'm not meant to be a part of the world, but I'm meant to improve it by seeing things that other people don't see.
Yeah.
So it's both the gift and the curse of your personality type. The gift is that you give something that your personality type specifically brings, but the curse is that it also differentiates you from other people, and you might sometimes be really affected by that otherness because human beings have this intrinsic desire to be seen, heard, and understood. And for INFJs, they can very easily understand other people, but they don't oftentimes get that understanding applied back to them. Mm. And so that's been life for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing all that. And I'm in total agreement, you know, that each type has their unique gift to bring to the world. And even within the types, you know, my perspective is anyway, that there are multiple ways that the INFJ can be expressed or that those functions can be expressed. You mentioned feeling really different and the otherness, and, you know, a lot of people can feel different for a lot of different reasons, but I'm wondering, like, what was the resulting feeling of that? You mentioned loneliness, but like, was it a good feeling to feel different? Did you feel like you didn't want to be different? What was the result of that?
I did want to be understood. So the difference was upsetting because with the extroverted feeling, I actually want to be like other people. I want to be socially appropriate. I want to fit in emotionally with them. And I'm not an Enneagram 4, so I don't want to be unique in that kind of way. Yeah. So the uniqueness was actually a point of you don't try to be unique, but you are unique, and that's causing you angst because you'd rather just fit in.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's kind of what I was thinking was the reason, but I wanted to kind of clarify that because, you can feel different for a lot of different reasons. And because there are so many mistypes of INFJs of other types, that I think that's important to recognize your extroverted feelings. Like, no, I actually want to belong. I want to feel like part of the other people. Does that feel true for you then?
Yeah. And I think that there was a part of me that wanted different kinds of conversations too. So it was almost like you felt like you weren't getting your nutrients. I grew up in a family where my mother was an ESFP and my dad was an ISTJ. And so they loved me, but I kind of felt like I was treated like livestock. They gave me food and shelter and clothing, but that's where it ended and began. And what I really wanted was intellectual nourishment and thought-provoking conversation. And that was an unmet need. And for me, if I don't get that, I feel like I'm eating junk food my whole life and that I'm desperately looking for nutrition. But then you realize the people around you don't need that form of nutrition. So you're the only person who needs that vitamin D, but the rest of the humankind doesn't need that specific vitamin. Yeah. And so INFJs, they have this need for self-actualization. It's like their Maslow's hierarchy of needs is turned upside down, and their primary need. Most people have that need for self-actualization, but it's in the background of their mind. For an INFJ, self-actualization is at the forefront of their mind, and they can't help it. And so when they're not being able to have that intellectually stimulating conversation or that ability to talk about abstract conversation or abstract topics, it actually kills you a bit inside. And you don't know how to vocalize that dead insideness, but it exists there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say I'm not an INFJ, obviously. I've been through that journey. But I totally feel the same about the self-actualization. I recognize what you're saying, though. Like, there's a unique need for purpose and something greater or bigger than yourself. Does that feel accurate for what you're saying?
You're spot on with that. And I find there are two kinds of people who look for this. One of them is intuitives. Mm-hmm. I find intuitives seek self-actualization naturally. But also people who have hit rock bottom, whether it's they're in life and they're in that midlife crisis and they're like, what is meaning? I need to find meaning. Or they hit rock bottom as in they got a divorce or they got fired from a job they saw as their identity and they don't know what else to live for. Yeah. Or a near-death experience can also cause people to want to self-actualize because they realize how little life they have left, and that creates a need to find purpose. Yeah. But I feel as an NI Dom, you just naturally have it because it's the air you breathe.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So when you talk about this, like intellectual nourishment and understanding that this is part of you and that you weren't really getting it fulfilled in your immediate family, what does that look like now? Like, how are you getting that nourishment? How do you find your place, so to speak?
Yeah, I found my community in a barrel of misfits. Mm. So the personality hacker community is one of them. A lot of the people that I have close in my life right now, they came from the 16 type community. So this is where I found my home. Mm. Yeah. And I find you almost kind of feel like an autistic child because you, like for me, I'm talking about myself, but I'm depersonalizing it by saying you. So I'm going to try to say I more often in this interview. Like, I kind of feel like an autistic child sometimes because I have these singular interests. You know, like, they talk about how, and this is not trying to trivialize autism, it's a serious or a real thing, but I find ways in which I can relate to it as Joyce, because I really like type theory. Like, once you've been hooked or once you've been bitten by the bug, it's hard to go back. And so it becomes this all-consuming thing. But even when I'm not practicing it, it's still in the background. Because once you see the color purple, you can't unsee the color purple. And so I find a lot of my close friends, they're from the space because we can talk about type, but we can also talk about anything under the sun that I'm pontifying at that moment and that they're pontifying. And it's almost like we get to travel each other's minds. Like, I've always been a person who desires to see life from a person's, the other person's mental landscape. And so I find that people in the type community are really comfortable with going deep really fast, because either they're really interested in personality theory, or they've had a lot of trauma happen to them, because a lot of people in this community are the walking wounded. They have stories that are really intense, with a lot of little T traumas or a big T trauma. And they're looking to type as a form of alternative medicine. So they're like, okay, going to therapy didn't help me, or trying to get help in the traditional methods didn't help. So what form of alternative medicine will actually be able to provide me the soothing to the deep depths of my soul that I'm looking for?
Yeah, totally agree. I think it's one reason why I ask, like, what motivated you to get into this? Because there's usually some sort of, I don't know if transition's the right word, but there's usually a point of something where people are like, what's happening in my life is not working right now. And, or I need to figure out why I'm having the experience I'm having. For you, it sounded like it was pretty young, but for a lot of people, it's a lot later, and they find their answers within this system, this framework, which I think is really beautiful. You mentioned having a singular interest, and in my mind, that's related a lot to your dominant function of introverted intuition, of really wanting to narrow in on something and go deep with that, which is how all of the introverted functions are. But can you share, I know it might be hard, but can you share a little bit more about, like, what is it really like to experience the world with introverted intuition? So the person listening can be like, oh, I relate, or, oh no, that's totally not me.
Yeah, so you see the under, or maybe I'll speak from first person again, because I'm trying to get into the practice of that. So in my experience, it's seeing the underlying meaning of things, the implications and the trajectory of certain concepts, or seeing the future, but in a more singular way, like you see the line of best fit in the future. And for some NI users, you just know. And so you're given this glimpse into long-range meaning. And sometimes you try to see deeper into a concept to the point where you miss the concept in front of you. So like, let's say, or there's a fishbowl in front of you, but then you start to look at all the implications of the fishbowl and what it might mean, or what it does mean. And then you miss the fishbowl itself by peering into its essence. So I feel like NI likes to drill deep into the essence of concepts, and it likes to focus on concepts that particularly make all the SE in their life make sense. They're trying to draw the line of best fit from all the SE data points. And this singular insight that explains it all.
Yes.
Like, what is the causation point? And it's this desire to find universal meaning from the SE points in your life. And so with an NI user, they can oftentimes explain the conclusion of their insights, like, here is my overall thought on this thing. And then people are like, can you explain the process? And then I have to open up about that. But almost I'm like a clam, where I'll share the 5% of my insight, and it's the takeaway, it's the gist, it's the main point. But then the person's like, can you explain all the thoughts behind that? And then I'll actually have to be probed. People will have to ask me questions for me to open up about what I was trying to say. Because it's most natural for me to share the end conclusion of my thought rather than the thought and process. Where I find with extroverted intuition users, like an ENFP, might go wide because they need to explain the process out loud as they're talking to abstract. So they're more, an ENFP is brainstorming out loud, whereas for me, I'm trying to cancel out all the noise to find the main essence of the idea. And then once I do that, I only explain the end of the idea.
Yeah. And I want to make sure people understand too, like, what you're describing here is looking for the underlying meaning, knowing the trajectory of things, just knowing, having a long range vision. Like, this is happening constantly. This is not like a once, you know, once a day type thing, or something that surprises you because it happens. Like, this is happening all the time, right? This is just the way that you exist on a moment by moment basis, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's all the time.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned the fact about, like, only sharing the 5%, the end summary, so to speak, which is very NI or introverted intuition. But also I would suspect, because it's introverted, like, it's kind of private in a way, I would suspect. Like, it is for me anyway. It's like, I don't know that I'm quite ready to share all of that unless I really know you well and I trust you, you know, because I think that's true for all of our introverted functions. There's a sense of it being really personal, I guess, and there's a vulnerability in sharing it, at least for me. Does that track for you?
It does track for me too. And the reason why I only share the end of it too is that's actually the most interesting part to me.
True.
I'm not really interested in explaining all the details. I'm more interested in explaining what they mean.
Yeah.
And so then I realize that people actually want to know, okay, but what are you actually saying? And they need the context to fully understand it.
Yeah.
And so it actually, our introverted functions also feel common sense to us because we live in them. So we don't realize how much the other person isn't understanding. Like for an FI user, like let's say an ISFP, they don't realize how much of their emotions they're not communicating on a day-to-day basis just because it's something that's always on.
Right.
So it almost feels like to say it is redundant because you feel like you already know it inside you. So if you say it, you're being redundant.
Yeah.
And that's why I guess people who lead with introverted functions or introverted functions in general, they don't say most of what they're thinking because they've already completed the thought inside themselves.
Exactly. Yeah.
So to say it again to you, it's just, it feels like repeating yourself and it feels weird because you're like, I feel like I'm just repeating myself if I say it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's ironic that I said repeating myself 5 times.
Yes, we're honing it. We're making the point here. But I think true. And I think as an extrovert myself, you know, I use my introverted functions, of course. But for me, there's a sense of vulnerability around it, too, of like it feels like taking this what might feel like a little bit of a raw type thing and bringing it out into the open and all the air and everything like touching, it doesn't feel as comfortable, I guess. And maybe that's because I'm an extrovert and I lead with extroverted function, but yeah, I love the point we're making about, the difference in the way the introverted functions work from the extroverted functions.
Yeah. And when you mentioned that vulnerability, I also think about contamination. It feels like when an introverted function brings it to the external world, they're contaminating something pure and then putting it to the elements.
Yes, that's what I was trying to think of. Thank you.
Yeah. That's why when an NI user tries to say their thought out loud, it's not as articulate as how it actually appears in their head.
Yes.
So they say it and they feel like they're losing their marbles as they're saying their point.
Yeah.
And they're like, I actually completely know what I'm trying to say, but I can't say it in words that well.
Yeah. And that's probably even more so if you're kind of asked to give that before you fully processed it. Like it's not complete in that way, that you don't have that in just the summary, as you were saying. Does that feel true?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I find for introverted functions, once they've already post-processed it, they can actually say it in the moment quite at a normal pace. But that's how you know an introverted function has already thought about something when they can say it right away.
So I want to point out just for the listener, like everything that we've been talking about so far is abstract and conceptual. We haven't really talked about any specific examples of things, maybe a couple here and there. You talked about your ENFP friend, but I'm just kind of trying to help the listener understand what it's like for a person who has a dominant intuitive function. It's concepts and concepts and concepts and abstractions in the conversation, most likely. Does that feel true for you? I'll just check in before we move on.
That does, yeah. As a person who has a platform, I learn to talk more example-y because I don't want to lose people. So it's more of an adaptation.
Yeah.
Like an NI user might learn throughout life that they appear vague when they talk. So they naturally start to incorporate more examples, but they do it to reinforce their main idea.
Yeah.
It's not because they need it to understand things. Whereas I've talked to high SI users like an ISFJ, the reason why they incorporate examples is because they need it to be convinced of an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So an ISFJ needs to say a real life instance in order to prove to themselves that what they're saying is not hokey. Mm-hmm. So
interesting.
It's just interesting how different types can do the same thing, but it comes from a different core.
Yeah, different motivation for sure.
Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about your second function, your extroverted feeling already, and kind of in the way of wanting to belong and wanting to be like others and wanting to kind of be in harmony. I'll use that word with others. So I'd like to talk about that with your introverted thinking, your third function together, since I feel like they work really well together and they're probably more conscious for you since those are in the middle of your cognitive function sequence. So yeah, share with us what's your experience with FE and TI and how you see them working in your life.
Yeah, with extroverted feeling, you know what you're about to say, how it'll land on the other person emotionally. So you're like, if I say this, it'll cause this implication or this feeling on the other person. So you're aware of the emotional ripple effect of what you're about to say, and you get affected by other people's emotions. You absorb their emotions, and you're in tune with other people's emotions. And that's something that's important to you in decision-making. A lot of high FE users, too, may have trouble describing themselves. So if you asked an FJ, what do you think are words that describe you? They'll be like, well, Patricia sees me like this. My mother sees me like this. Carol sees me like this. And what this is all pointing at is that extroverted feeling is aware of how other people are perceiving them. But with TI lower down, you don't always know what you see yourself as. And so with TI, it's like, is it accurate for me to describe myself? I don't really know. So I'm going to look at other disparate points of view from other people because they see me objectively. So with extroverted feeling, you do defer things to the other person. You're like, how do you feel? And I'm going to make a decision based on how you feel. Whereas with the TI, it's this framework of consistency. So whenever I hear something, I'm vetting it against a framework of all the truths that I've known before and seeing if it makes sense with all the conclusions that I've come to before in a logical way. Yeah. And I come to principles through deductive reasoning. So from deducing, I created this really elegant, airtight framework in my point of view that every piece of information needs to go through for me to know if it makes sense.
Yeah.
So that exists, but sometimes I feel guilty saying controversial thoughts to people. So I'll need some sort of permission. I either know that the other person will be okay with what I'm saying, or I know how to say it in a way where the other person will accept it.
Right.
So, you know, I have the superpower where I actually do have the ability to say harsh truths without them sounding harsh at all. So I have a lot of finesse and a lot of ability to say things in a way that lands well with other people. Ironically, a lot of FJ types can do this too, but we just feel guilty saying things that could potentially hurt someone. Yeah. So in a way, we can get away with it the most, but we don't even exercise that power to its fullest extent because we're too cautious with wanting people to feel good. So we may even prevent ourselves from saying our TI real thoughts about something.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love, you know, when you first started out, you're talking about kind of understanding the emotional ripple and absorbing emotions. And I think that is true. I agree with you, but I think a lot of other types actually recognize that or feel that that's true for them. So I love that you brought up this idea of having difficulty describing yourself. And that's a difference, I think, with the FJ types and having their, what we might call the identity function, your TI or FI, or well, TI for the FJs, in the third or fourth position, because that's the sense of like who you are. And as an INFJ with that third, it's still pretty strong, but as you were saying, the weight of what other people are thinking and feeling seems to, in the end, outweigh that, at least when it comes out, at least in the ways that your truths come out. Does that feel true for you? I'm not sure if I explained that very well, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think the reason why FJ types don't like to describe themselves is it's a TI reason. So I could say that I'm certain traits, but is it consistent with how other people see me and how these traits actually show up? So TI will get so caught up in defining something and making sure that it actually makes sense that they may never arrive at a certain definitiveness with seeing yourself a certain way. Like, I could call myself kind, but then how do you define kind? And then how do other people see kind? And is it a universal description of kind, or is it just a personal description of kind? And is that still valid? Yeah. And when you have an extroverted judging function, FE, higher up, what it can also do is that it can cause this, what's the point? It's like, if only you see yourself as kind, or if only you see yourself as warm, then are you really warm? If a tree fell in a forest and no one's there to hear it, then did the tree really fall? So then another reason why FJs don't like to self-define is like, what's the point of being kind if you're the only person who thinks you're kind? That's why it matters how other people see you or the world sees you too. Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about those, the middle two functions. Is there anything else you'd like to say about those before we talk about the inferior function?
Yeah, nothing right now. We might circle back later on.
Sure. So extroverted sensing as an inferior, I think a lot of people can relate to this if they feel sensitive to external stimuli, myself included. That's one reason I thought I was an INFJ a while back. But how does having that inferior extroverted sensing really show up for you?
Yeah, so when it's in the inferior position, it's either an aspiration or an insecurity. There's a deep sense of uncertainty when you're using it at times. Even if you're using it well, you still doubt yourself. And so with extroverted sensing, it's letting things happen as they happen and rolling with the punches. And so I find with myself, these are with types that have NI higher up in general, is that you want to go into a situation already knowing the purpose of why you're going into it. And so I've had to learn to grow into my SC and make meaning in hindsight rather than needing all the meaning to be at the beginning. Like, it's almost like I needed the purpose or the trajectory to be there up front, as opposed to just experiencing it and then figuring out what it meant beforehand. And so with types who are the EPs, like an SE dominant ESTP, or even like an ENTP with higher up NE, they will go into a situation and then afterwards find out what it meant to them. Like, they'll almost act and leap before they think about it. Whereas I want to develop more extroverted perceiving, where it's like, I really just want to go into things without needing there to be a long range purpose. And so being okay with just letting things arise as they arise, even if it feels meaningless up front. Yeah. So
how hard is it then for you to roll with the changes, to roll with the punches, to allow that extroverted sensing experience to just happen?
It's difficult because you feel like you want to simulate it beforehand.
Exactly.
Because you don't feel like you can adapt and improvise in the moment. Because it's difficult. The reason why we also want to simulate it beforehand, I'm starting to talk on we. Like, I was
no
trying
worries.
At the
bit. You do you, Joyce.
Speaking on for the collective of INFJs now, apparently.
Okay.
So with the NI wanting to simulate things up front, it comes from a desire to want everything to have a meaning and purpose. So there's a huge intentionality that comes with NI. Like, the reason why you want to plan up front is you want every little part of a plan to mean something. And so you feel like if you have no plan, you're just at the mercy of whatever happens to you at that moment. And that feels really disorienting, because if you planned up front, it could have had so much more meaning embedded in every little step. But now that you're just going with the moment, there's no intentionality to it. And so it feels like you're being pulled in a meaningless way. It's like, but why am I doing all of these little adaptations if they don't have a deeper reason for why you're doing them? And so it's almost existential to go with the moment. And so another reason why NI dominants want to simulate beforehand is they need to know how to do something before they do it, so that everything has a good reaction time to it. Like, I even know INTJs that are very into Taekwondo, and they need to pre-plan their next move to do it. And it's like even their spontaneous moves are planned. Mm-hmm. And it's this high risk, high reward kind of planning, because you have this singular plan, but if anything goes wrong, now you have to write another plan to go into another way. And so NIDOMs, they have a plan. So if it goes exactly how the plan is planned, then it's fine. But if it takes a really big unexpected move, then you're going to have to take the time to think about, okay, if I plan another route here, then now I have to future project how that will turn out. And then you have the whiplash of now thinking about this different train of thought when you are thinking about the first train of thought.
Yeah. So is that like an energetic drain, or how would you describe that, to have that whiplash, as you said, just jarring in your life, like jarring to think about it?
Yeah. I mean, it's an energetic drain, but it's also, you're losing the meaning of the initial plan. So it's like, oh, there was a purpose to the first way of thinking about how the situation was going. And I don't know if there's a purpose to the second train of thought. Yeah. So I don't think all INFJs are this consciously planful. Like if NI is your dominant function, you might plan in a way where, like, planning sounds like concrete planning, right, which people could mistaken for SI, right? Because SI actually has all the literal instructions or templates of how to do something. Mm-hmm. With NI planning, you're planning how the concept will go and what needs to be done in the concept for the concept to land.
Right.
So it's a little different.
Yeah. So you talked about like not wanting to have that whiplash of changing the plan or running a new scenario, and also wanting each experience to have meaning and purpose. But I'm also wondering, like, isn't there also some fear of like not being able to handle what comes up in the moment?
Yes.
And I was like, I think we should mention that as well. yeah. Can you describe that? Like, what is that like to have that sense of like, I don't know if it's whether you don't feel capable that you'll be able to handle it, or what is that for you, do you think?
Yeah, you don't know if you're going to be able to handle it because you haven't thought it through yet. Mm-hmm. So you don't have the safety of the mental preparation.
Right.
You're just trying to flail around and hope that it works.
Right. And your mental preparation, going back to what we said earlier, is that one track of what is most likely to happen. And so you haven't run like 20 of those, or you don't have 20 of those scenarios. Is that true?
Yeah, it's more of a singular pathway.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always have to be actual steps, because that's more of an SI, very concrete.
Right, right.
Step-by-step planning. Yeah. For some INFJs, it can just be the concept of how they're seeing the future too.
Yep. I think it's important too to talk a little bit, since you're bringing up SI, the differences in SE and SI, or extroverted sensing, which you and I both use. And it's more of like this generalized experience, you know, it's like this thing happened or this thing happened. And as you were saying, it's what's happening in the moment. The experiences as they arise, there's no specific details like dates and numbers. And those are all like SI type of details. Like you said, the list, steps of how things are going to go. So if you have NI and SE, or SE and NI, either one, it's this more generalized idea of the plan and what's going to happen. Yeah, does that track for your experience as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think as an NI dominant, you're stuck in the future by default. Mm-hmm. And so you naturally want the SE present moment to line up with the desired future as much as possible.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And probably do you do things to try to make that happen, to make that desired future happen?
I think so, yeah. But mm-hmm. that's taken effort. So I think a lot of NI dominance, it stays in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, you do have these great thoughts about human race or the human condition or the future, but or ideas in general. But NI dominance may never find it in themselves to get into their inferior SE to actually make things happen in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so SE inferior can also be a lot of missed opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know that there's a window of time where action is best hit. Like a great phrase for SE is strike it while it's hot.
Yeah.
Or milk it in the moment. Whereas NI dominants might have a little bit of analysis paralysis in thinking and simulating and not actually going out and being active.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So speaking of the importance of integrating some of that SE, as you were talking about earlier, into your introverted intuition. So let's shift gears just a little bit and talk about the idea or the concept of motivation. And I'm curious, like, how much, first of all, before we get into any of the questions, like, how much do you think about motivation? Is it on your mind? Is it something you consider a lot? What's your relationship with it?
My relationship with motivation is I've always seen my life at the very end point. And I find people who have hit rock bottom, they do think about their life in terms of how will it be like when I die and will I be proud of myself when I die? And so motivation has come for me by visualizing what I want at the end of my life. Because I already see it that I'm one third the way there. And so can I afford to not think about the end of my life? It just comes naturally too. I almost get a sense of purpose from thinking about the end of my life, because I think that it helps me remember that one day I will die and that I want to live life with that perspective in mind. So you can really see how my NI shows up in me, in that I have the end in mind before I start something. So when I do things in my life, I'm a very active INFJ in the community. Like, most INFJs don't get to the point of throwing themselves out there. But I almost have this morbidity in my perspective where I really do want to die feeling fulfilled. And I went into the type community a little bit too, wondering how can I cure dead insideness? I've almost wanted a life where I gave myself more permission to be more alive. And I wanted that before I died, because you only have so much time to give yourself that permission. And so that has really fueled everything that I've made. It's a desire to be more alive than I am right now, and to seek incremental aliveness in everything that I do. Because I think with a lot of intuitives, or with a lot of people just with traumatic childhoods or lives that weren't ideal, you do feel like something is missing from your life, and that you're looking to feel more whole or more integrated or more individuated, or you're looking to feel more challenged and you're wondering where you can get that from. And so for me, I was wanting to create a bubble in which it would foster this aliveness in myself. So there are two ways to find aliveness. It's either you change the mindset within your own brain to be more alive from changing your attitude, or you could be more alive from changing your environment. And so I find that if I'm able to change my environment, so I'm surrounded by people who are able to promote my aliveness because their lifestyle or their perspective or the space that they hold for me makes me feel more alive, then I will seek those out. I will nurture them. I will grow them, because I think aliveness is a currency that is priceless. No billionaire can buy aliveness. They might be able to get rid of some survival fears by having a lot of money, but aliveness is the most precious thing you can have in the world. And so a lot of my motivation has been, how do I cultivate a sustainable sense of aliveness in myself and in other people? And that's where the introverted intuition shows up too. Introverted intuition looks to make things sustainable by looking at the root cause of things. Like, you notice other people are solving things with Band-Aid solutions, and NI looks at the core concept that is causing everything. So this is why everything is coming from this thing. And if we solve this core implication or this core mechanism, we can actually solve the whole system. Yeah. And so NI oftentimes sees how you can uproot everything to solve it at its most fundamental principle. So this could be a little bit of the NI plus TI too. You're looking at things from a systems perspective of the TI, but the NI also does that as well. And you're looking to create this change in human relationships. Like, how can I give others insights or things to think about that can improve their human dynamics and the relationships around them or their relationship with themselves? So it's about humanitarian issues. How can I and I find the root cause to human issues?
Yeah. You started out talking about aliveness and feeling dead inside. And I'm wondering if you can describe a little bit more of what that's like, and why the search for aliveness, like, why do you have a lack of aliveness, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah. The lack of aliveness comes from playing broken telephone your whole life. You feel like you're saying something and the other person actually isn't receiving what you're saying in the totality of what you're trying to communicate. So it feels like your whole life, you're talking to a wall. It's like, great, I'm speaking to you, but I actually am not getting the meaning communicated. And so it does create the sense of you really don't have human connection if you don't feel seen and heard. Whereas INFJs are very good at doing that for other people, but very rarely do they receive that in their life. And so when you are the minority in your situation, so it could be your personality type or a form of neurodivergence you have or some other thing that makes you the minority, it's hard for the majority to understand where you're coming from because they see your difference as a defect. So I grew up with an ESTJ brother, and he was almost like a military drill sergeant. And so he saw my abstract ponderings as something that needed to be cured. And so he was like, if you are not productive of every moment, if you don't wake up at 5 a.m. every morning, put butter in your coffee and take cold showers and be effective, then my brother actually told me, unproductive people don't deserve to live in this world. Mm-hmm. And so it's growing up in a Chinese culture where they value your productivity or your label over your well-being. It's almost like my immediate circumstances, they cared more about their pride, their image, and how they look to other people over their relationship with their child, like me, or the well-being of their child. So I always felt like my well-being was the last priority. And so how can you feel loved when you feel like you're prioritized last? And when you feel like people don't understand you at your core, then you're always feeling like, I guess, understanding me is last place to this person. They don't care enough to actually put the time in to respect who you are. Mm-hmm. So it is this, like, you know, everyone has FI, even if it's not in their core stack, because everyone does eventually want to be appreciated for who they are. But some people might be more aware of questions pertaining to who they are. But still, nonetheless, people deeply desire being understood beyond how a person wants to see you. So let me try to ground this down because I sound really vague right now and I realize that. And so my brother wanted me to be an ESTJ. He thought I was just being a worse version of an ESTJ. Whereas, no, I'm not an ESTJ and I will never be an ESTJ. I'm just different. I'm not worse than. So figuring out personality type gave a level of self-acceptance. It's like, hey, it's okay if you aren't an ESTJ. You have your gifts to the world, and you have people who value and appreciate what you bring to the world. And there's this saying, find people who speak your language so you don't spend a lifetime translating your soul. Mm-hmm. And so with my brother or with my family, I really did feel like I had to translate my soul to have human dignity. Like, I didn't feel like I had human dignity until I was 26. Mm. Like, up to that age, no one really actually put in the effort to have an actual conversation with me. And a part of that's my fault, because as an FJ type, I turn the conversation back to the other person, because I'm like, what are your needs? What do you value? And how can I meet those needs? Mm-hmm. So I contributed to the problem of people not understanding me, but I don't want to die that way. So a lot of this has been related back to doing things that my future self would be proud of that I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And so people talk about self-care in terms of having a bubble bath, but I see self-care as taking care of things your future self would want you to take care of. And so in a way, it's self-care for me to think about my future and to actually give it its best shot. And I realized that a lot of INFJs are perfectionists, and that's what stops them from action. But a lot of people in general are perfectionists as well. And I found that I wanted to change the way that I lived from seeking perfection to, I actually want to navigate imperfection as well as I can with the resources that I'm giving. So yeah, death to the perfectionist part of me. And I wanted to give life to the part of me, okay, Joyce, you're just going to try to navigate this imperfection as well as you can. That's my desire.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all that with me. And I love that you have, it sounds like anyway, you're on this track of aliveness, as you've described. And what I wrote down as you were talking was that it's like bringing that internal part, as we described earlier, out and having someone receive it. That was what you shared, and that feels like human connection to you. And then in that way, you feel alive, like this part of you that's so precious is being seen and held and nurtured and valued and appreciated. And it sounds like that's what this aliveness feels like to you. Does that feel true?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's being seen and heard and honored at your deepest parts, your most fundamental parts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love too how you brought up like your role in that. Well, you can't change your family of origin, your family dynamics and how they related with you. You can recognize like, what's my part in this? So the person listening, you know, like many of us have felt misunderstood or have felt disconnected or lonely or these types of things. And maybe it's your cognitive wiring and maybe it's something else, but there is an element of like figuring out, as Joyce is saying, like, what do you want your life to be? And that's a very NI thing, like looking down the line and saying, this is how I want to be. This is what I want to be thinking of when I'm on my deathbed, so to speak. And then trying to implement today, like what's that mean today? What do I need to do today to make that happen? Does that feel true for you?
Yeah, that's totally true.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking too, I know we started about talking about motivation, but all of this is a core motivation for you, as you've shared. But knowing the struggles that an INFJ has or an INTJ with their extroverted sensing in the present opportunity, the present moment, the current experiences, how does that impact this trajectory towards your aliveness?
Yeah, I feel like sometimes we are the biggest obstacle in our own way. And so with the INFJ and INTJ, it can be your extroverted perceiving function as last, because you feel like you can simulate something and know it without experiencing it.
Right.
So the lesson is you still have to go out there and experience it. Mm-hmm. And you have so many precious insights that if you just went out there and shared it with people, that it would also benefit them too. So what I envy with ENFJs and ENTJs is they go out there and they have feedback and they have conversation with the tribe. So they're able to actually exchange insight and influence the tribe. Whereas INJs, like INTJs and INFJs, can do that. Like they have all this insight. But sometimes if they haven't developed their SE lower down, they don't actually go out and influence other people's lives or influence the collective as much as they could.
Yeah. And so that, that getting out there for you in connection with what we're talking about with aliveness, would that be connecting with people, developing your relationships? What does that look like on like a practical sensory basis? If you can give us an example.
Yeah. Aliveness is having the kind of conversations I want with people, which I am actually cultivating. And aliveness looks like being able to share everything about you to another human being. So a lot of INFJs operate as 80% distance and 20% closeness with people, and they want to actually be closer to people. Mm-hmm. So INFJs can have a protective layer. It's almost like an INFJ has 100 walls up, and as they get to know you, they let down one wall and then another wall. But it's almost like it takes time for an INFJ to fully feel comfortable with opening up to someone. One, because they have extroverted feeling, and that creates more of a focus on the other person's experience and their emotions. So it's not that natural for you to talk about yourself in that way. But it's also because with introverted intuition, you actually have a harder time sharing your insights about something because you usually share the conclusion of it or just the top 5% of the iceberg.
Yeah.
And it takes either someone asking the right questions to get at your true thought, or you notice this innate tendency in yourself, so you share it anyway. So I want to myself get more comfortable with volunteering information without people needing to ask, because I'm becoming a barrier to people becoming intimate with me. And I also want to be more comfortable talking about my life with another human being, because I want them to know every aspect of my soul. So if I want relationships that are the highest level of intimacy, the highest level of closeness, then I have to take personal responsibility in the ways that I could actually create those kind of relationships with my own hands too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think one of the most top tier relationships is when you allow yourself to be sculpted by another person. So you're not only influencing the other person is able to say things that move you or influence your perspective on things. And then you're almost co-creating a perspective with them and building a universe with them. And so I hope to be sculpted by the people around me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, they do say, what is it, like you are the average of the five people who are closest to you or something of that, something similar to that. I can't remember exactly what the phrase is, but I think that's what you're talking about. Like there's an integration, there's a... I think when each individual person is playing their part, is being their truest self and doing, like you said, playing the role that you can, doing what you can to bring that connection, then there's a new piece that's formed by each of the individuals that becomes its own thing and is a creation, as you said, of the group, of each of the individuals themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, one last question about motivation. We've talked quite a bit about what motivates you, and I think it's pretty clear what's motivating you. And is there anything in particular that really zaps your motivation, that takes away your motivation, that drains you?
Yeah, it's Chinese immigrant culture.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are a lot of traditional Chinese households who believe that people are fundamentally bad. And so because you are fundamentally bad, we need to insult you, we need to criticize you, we need to belittle you, we need to threaten you in order for you to behave well or like a decent human being. And so all my life I've been treated like, oh, this is the worst version of you, and I believe that that's you, so let's try to discipline you into being something else. Whereas being surrounded by people in my life now who believe in my potential, they see it, they give me something to live up to, they give me something to aim for. And so that motivates me when someone is able to give me a higher version of myself and they believe that I can genuinely get there and they believe that I am already there. There's a phrase, I believe, by Michelangelo. He believes that the angels are already there and that you sculpt them to release them from the sculpture. So I want someone to believe that of me. So they see that I'm already this potential and all I need is a little bit of a sculpting to be released and to actually show that potential in a deeper way to the world. Yeah. So when someone has that view that you are capable of great things, it takes away that false ceiling that people give you. It's like, hey, you can only live up to this. Like, people, sometimes people fall into the realm of perfectionism because they've had people in their life tell them, I only believe this much of you. And so when people tell you, if you mess up once, you are forever flawed. It's a stain that you will never be able to get rid of. It creates people to be perfectionists because they're like, if I make one small mistake, then you will forever see me as a bad person. And so I must never mess up or else I'll get eternally shamed by you. And so I've been trying to cultivate the mindset that even if I mess up, it's okay because I'm in the ring. Like Brené Brown, she talks about being in the ring. So people can criticize you all you want, but at the end of the day, you can tell yourself, I tried and I gave it my best. And to some people, my best will be good enough. And to some people, it won't. But at least I gave it my best shot to live life as fully as I could before I died. So it's all of this, like, I'm really communicating to the 90-year-old version of myself. I'm like, the 90-year-old version of me would have wanted me to give it my best shot right now. Even if it's me stumbling and falling. I'm a toddler who's learning how to walk, and that's okay if you fall down. It's okay if you don't do well. Do people shame toddlers when they're not able to walk and take their first steps? No, they don't. And so we're all just little kids trying to stumble through life. No one has it fully, what do you call it, put together. And so I guess the reason why we're all so perfectionists is we think other people have it all put together and they don't. And if we accept that we're all just little kids stumbling through the world trying to not trip over our toes, then yeah, we're forever toddlers and that's okay.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I think what you're sharing too can help us to develop or to open ourselves to more compassion and empathy for other people and understanding, as you said, if we can all take this perspective of life, not just for ourselves, but for other people, that breeds so much more understanding and so much more space for the other people's mistakes. And then also knowing our own responsibility for what is our part in this, in the grand scheme of things. Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing so many beautiful insights with us and opening up and sharing about your life and your life's experiences, helping us to understand what really drives an INFJ and what it's like to be an INFJ. Are there any final thoughts that have come up that you didn't get to share or any things that you'd like to share about INFJs that we haven't covered yet?
Yeah, so I am an INFJ Enneagram 9. I recently found out I was a 9. And one of the reasons why I do everything that I do and what motivates me is that I've been falling asleep most of my life on myself. So that there's that forgetting of the self. There's that self-canceling. And so I don't want to live the rest of my life numbed out of myself. And so this desire, this motivation to keep going comes from me wanting to fight against that nineness of, do you really want to live the rest of your life not considering yourself and just, it's a really sad thought. Like, you wouldn't even want a third person to fall asleep to themselves. Like, it's so easy to tell another person, hey, don't fall asleep to yourself. But it's so hard to tell yourself that. And so I don't want that fallacy to happen in my life where I'm kinder to other people than I am to myself. And so, yeah, those nines gotta wake up. So it's almost like I want to model to other nines that you can learn to be more aware of what you want for your life and take the right action that'll lead you to a path that you're happier with. So, yeah. But in order to tell nines that story, I actually have to do it myself. I can't be all talk, no action. Otherwise, I'll just be like everyone's parents who are like, hey, do this. And then they don't even do it themselves. I don't want to be a hypocrite. Yeah. That would suck.
Yeah. I see it. You know, you talked about the nine, especially needing to wake up to themselves. And I think all of us have a version of that, of needing to wake up to some unconscious patterns or some unconscious ways in which we're living life. I just really appreciate you opening up and letting us see maybe the 5% of your soul that you're willing to show us here. And I love what's developing in your life and all that you're going to experience on your path of aliveness. I feel it's really beautiful, and I see the great potential as well. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome.
Subscribe to Leslie's podcast.
And Joyce's channel as well. All right. Take care. Okay. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Joyce as an INFJ, and maybe you learned a few new things about the INFJ type. This is a pretty poorly misunderstood type because so many people identify as INFJs, and it's such a very common result on personality types. And really, for anyone who likes spending time alone or who feels insightful, who feels like they care about people, for people who desire meaning, a lot of the things that Joyce talks about can be things that many people can relate to. However, the key difference is in the way Joyce demonstrated her introverted intuition all throughout the conversation. She's always looking at the underlying purpose, the meaning, and anyone who has introverted intuition is going to be doing that to a degree. But for someone who has a dominant introverted intuitive function, like Joyce, that function is running constantly. It's not like an insight pops up here and there, or she's interested in the meaning of one type of thing. It's always, always happening. And translating that into her conversation about motivation, again, she's motivated by her introverted, intuitive, or NI vision of how she wants to be at the end of her life. And on the other side, being demotivated by anything that feels like it is limiting her potential and not helping inspire or encourage that in her. I think that's a pattern that I've seen in most people who use introverted intuition, especially in the first couple of functions. Would you like to figure out if you're an INFJ or maybe some other type? If so, let's work together to clarify your personality type in the 16-type system. You can go to hellopersonality.com/16types, that's 16 types all together, to complete an application to work together, to first identify your accurate type in the system, and then to get started on your own growth journey of working with your personality-related patterns to live more purposefully, intentionally, and consciously. So coming up in our next episode, you'll meet an INTJ guest, and we'll talk about their relationship with motivation. Having two INJ types back-to-back will be a really fun way to reinforce the patterns associated with dominant NI and inferior SE or extroverted sensing. Okay, I'll see you then. Take care.